I like it for $10. What's your bit?
$24.
$24, that's an odd amount.
$2,400, Edith.
No. Oh, no, Della, you can't. Della, you're crazy. I won't let y'all stop you.
Oh, please, Edith, don't take on. You were right about me. I am a gambler. I'm not like you, venturing $5 or $10 for a thrill. No, sir, this to me is a living. It's a way I never lived before. I can't explain it.
Oh, Della, I wish I'd never introduced you to this.
Hi, everybody. This is the U.S. Racing Sports Gambling Show. I am your friendly host, Derek Simon, and this is the show where we talk about everything and anything related to the world of gambling. Of course, we started off last week talking about horse racing, and I'm going to kind of continue the theme this week. But what I want to do with the show in the future is talk more about sports gambling in general. I've always said whether you're investing on Wall Street, playing the point spread in Vegas, or betting the horses, a lot of similarities. So a lot of news to cover. First of all, there are some things, or at least one thing in particular, that you need to know.
I'm looking forward to completing your training. In time, you will call me Master.
All righty then. I learn it from a book.
I find this scientifically fascinating.
You're going to remember this the rest of your life.
Oh, I already knew that.
I don't get it.
What part didn't you understand?
Will you never learn?
Help you, I can. Yes.
Well, as you might be able to tell, I'm a bit under the weather, but save your cards and letters of sympathy. If you want to send checks, you know, to help me buy groceries, that's fine. But hopefully we'll be able to get through the program today. Big news, of course, the Breeders' Cup last week and a huge win in the Breeders' Cup Classic. I wanted to talk about it a little bit. Of course, my big concern, and I expressed this on social media, and as with many of my expressions on social media, it was taken wrong by some people. I talked about the fact that I was disappointed in the Classic because all the speed horses were gone. First Beholder scratched, then Smooth Roller scratched. I had the projected early speed ration. That's my own measurement of early energy disbursement. The lower, the quicker. Of a zero. And as it turned out, American Pharoah set the pace, a minus two, but he did what I wanted him to do. Given the fact that I felt this was an absolute setup for him. He was the lone front runner in a race with no speed, and he'd shown before that in those scenarios, he could not only set the pace, but he could motor home. Well, he did it. A minus two LSR, or late speed ration. That figure measures late energy disbursement. The higher, the better. Great, great performance by American Pharoah. And it went a little something like this.
So it's picked up a bit as they head for the far turn. American Pharoah's lead is a length and a half. And now Victor Espinosa starts to pump on them and says, let's go. On the far turn, they're in front by two. F&X continues to chase. And then comes Frosted and Totalist. And they're all put to full out drives. And American Pharoah is getting away. And they're into the stretch. And American Pharoah has a four length lead. F&X is second. And then it's Frosted, Totalist, and Honor Code. American Pharoah comes into his final furlong. And he's got a five, a six length lead as they come to the wire. A Triple Crown winner. A Breeders' Cup winner. Of a lifetime! American Pharoah has won the Breeders' Cup Classic over F&X and Honor Code in a final time of 2 minutes, 0.07 seconds. He went out in style.
Now, I understand that many of you listening right now are very concerned, but let me just, you know, ease your worries. Larry Colmus, the track announcer, is okay. He had throat surgery. And everything's good now. I love Larry Colmus. I mean, I think he's a great announcer. And man, does he get excited. I mean, I'm sick right now. And I don't think I could come up with that call. Anyway, great, great performance by American Pharoah. It was really nice to see him get back on the winning track. Of course, We had some crazy news that we'll talk about next. I almost don't want to talk about it, but I think we have to.
I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story.
I'm not gonna lie to you. It's freaking weird.
Let's get nuts!
You just blew my mind.
This shit's crazy.
Are you nuts?
Well, unless you've been living in a cave, and I gotta tell you, there were times this week that I wish I was living in a cave. You obviously heard about the Sprint debacle, the Run Happy debacle. Of course, Run Happy wins the Breeders' Cup Sprint. It's a fantastic story. 32-year-old trainer wins the Breeders' Cup. It's really rags to riches. This is a horse that wasn't even on anybody's radar early on. Wins the Breeders' Cup Sprint. The next day, that 32-year-old trainer, Maria Burrell, was fired. I wrote about it at usracing.com, thinking that I'd written a fair piece. I talked to both parties, talked to Maria, talked to the connections of Run Happy, let everybody respond. Before I published the article, I sent it to both parties. Hey, what do you want corrected? What do you want added? And gave them a chance to respond. So I thought that even though I knew some people would have that gut reaction and still be angry, I thought, you know, I think it was fair. I think people are going to respond well.
Wrong!
It just didn't go that way. And, you know, I learned something very important. Oftentimes when I talk about racing or talk about any issue, I try to take emotion out of it. Yet in my piece, there were some emotional words. I mentioned that Maria Burrell pleaded with me not to have it published. Well, she asked me not to publish it. And a big part of that is because, let's be honest, the public reaction has been very favorable for her. There's no sense in dredging anything else up. Now, the reason I thought it was important to publish this piece is because I had been in contact with the Run Happy team since the time this horse broke its maiden. And the reason I was is because I've been so intrigued by the horse's training schedule. And to add to that, to add credence to that, in August, I published a piece. At the time, I was with Twin Spires, so it's on the Twin Spires blog, talking about workouts. And Run Happy is one of the horses I talk about because he didn't just work out. He blazed. And I talked about it, of course, last week in my Breeders' Cup preview. And it is my firm belief, and this is why I was so adamant about publishing this piece, that the new age training methods are killing our sport. Now, in the past, I've been somewhat restrained from saying what I really think about some of the industry practices. I'm not restrained anymore. I have always considered myself a player's advocate. That is the reason I got into this game, to provide information to players, to help players, because I think it's a great game, and I am not so naive to believe that it's not the bettors that are carrying the burden of this sport on their backs. They've been beaten down. They've been trashed. I have often quoted a statement from a jockey club member from back in the 1800s, where he says, bettors are the manure upon which this sport has been built. Now, I don't know exactly how he meant that, but it sure doesn't sound good, does it? And I think players have been treated like manure. So when I hear the industry come out and criticize the connections of Run Happy because he's been worked too hard and everybody knows that you can't jog a horse the next day, I call BS. This is also an industry that thinks raising purses will stimulate interest in racing. This is also an industry that believes racinos is a great model to get people betting. This is also an industry that when synthetic tracks proved to be almost twice as safe as dirt tracks, they were removed because industry people didn't like them. Bettors didn't like them. I don't really need to hear from industry people. What I do need to hear, what I do need to see, is data and statistics. And what I've seen from Run Happy is a horse that has been worked in an old school manner, and it paid off. People ask me after I wrote the piece, well, what do you think about the LeCompte? He was hurt. He had a broken bone in that race. Really? He ran on a broken bone. Don't we have track vets? Don't we have late scratches at the gate? Aren't they supposed to be looking for this kind of stuff? And how do we know he had a broken bone before LeCompte? Isn't it more plausible that he got hurt in the LeCompte? you realize the horse did not finish last in the LeCompte. He didn't ease. He finished the race. And in fact, he set a blistering pace. It was his first route try. So, I just think we got to temper our opinions on some of these things until we know the facts. And the only thing I opined on in my piece is what I knew. Now, I think it got convoluted and confused because there were so many quotes from the Run Happy side and very few quotes, basically none, from Maria's side. But that was not through lack of effort. I asked her specifically to be quoted, sent her the piece so she knew what was being said in the piece. And it's just almost depressing to me that people react in such an emotional way. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to be real curious to see if some of the people that are reacting like they are, and I've heard a lot of media people, a lot of media people that I know own horses, that I know have stables, and I want to see if they're going to put their money where their mouth is and they're going to send horses to Maria Burrell. And mind you, I have nothing negative to say about anybody. That's what I so desperately tried to avoid in this piece. And I had people ask me, well, why didn't you look into, you know, Mac's firing of trainers or Laura Wohler's, you know, reputed bad temper, or for that matter, Maria Burrell's abuse charges? Because it wasn't germane. I didn't want to do that. That's precisely what I didn't want to do. I didn't want to drag people through the mud. I wanted to talk specifically about what I knew because I heard so many industry types jumping on the, well, Maria was behind everything here and these connections are garbage. And worse, I hope the horse doesn't win another race. What in the heck did Run Happy do in this saga? What was the thing that so aggrieved you, those of you making those statements about Run Happy? Just a sad, sad story on all fronts. Anyway, we're going to turn to some happy news now. My next guest won the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. He's a great guy. We recorded the interview on Monday. Here is Tommy Massis, a.k.a. The Hammer. I'm now joined by Tommy Massis. Tommy had a great Breeders' Cup. He won the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. What was it for, $300,000, something like that, Tommy?
Yeah, it was. I won $90,000 with my bankroll, $230,000 for first place, and a $25,000 share in a West Point Thoroughbred.
Wow. Now, you got to tell me, because I heard some stories in terms of how the betting worked. How was your bankroll set up? And it sounds like you were playing real money.
Yeah, it's a $7,500 live bankroll. And the stipulations are you got to make on the Friday, you got to make $500-$600 bets, and on the Saturday, $500-$900 bets. And other than, you know, once you check those boxes, you could basically do whatever you want.
Now, I heard from a mutual friend that you had a $4,000 exacta found over the ARC winner. Is that true?
That is correct.
Wow. Tommy, how did you come up with that bet? I mean, that, you know, when you figure it's $7,500 for your bankroll, $4,000 is on an exacta. That's amazing to me.
Yeah, well, I had that was the second day. The first day, I finished the first day with almost doubling my bankroll with the same trainer, jockey Ryan Moore and O'Brien. I hit me a bomb. I had 400 to win and a $10 try. So I left Friday with a double bankroll. And then the first race Saturday, the first race I was going to check off one of my $900 bets, and I hit a $400 exacta in the first race. So now I'm at $25,000. And after that first race, I decided right there that I'm going to go home with $6,000.
Okay.
Because I knew what my strategy was. Other than I'd have to put in one more qualifying bet, which I did and lost. After that, I knew there was three possible plays the rest of the day. And one of them, a horse called Conquest Big E, who's 30-1 morning line, he was only really a play if he was 30-1. And I kind of knew he wasn't going to be near that, so that was my strategy from there. And then I got to the sprint and blew about 12 on the sprint, 12,000 on the sprint. And now I got to the Conquest Big E race. He was sitting 11, 12-1. And I wasn't going to take, you know, at 30-1, I probably would have bet half my bankroll or 20-5-1. But then I just went off of him. I hate betting the rail at any distance, kind of bad luck for me. So I figured I bet $1,700 on Conquest Big E. If he wins, now I'll have a large enough amount to bet win on Found and not have to worry about an exactor.
Mm-hmm.
So when he lost, now I'm sitting with 13,000. And with the 13,000, I did a $3,000 box, 1-9, and left the room where I was at. I went out to have a smoke. And as I was finishing my smoke, I looked up at the probables on the screen, and I saw, you know, if I hit this exactor 1-9, I'm going to quit. I'll take that money home as a consolation prize. But if a 9-1 comes in, I'm going to be sitting around 70. You know, and I'm going, you know, that's about the number I thought before the contest started. I put a number down that I thought would take to win the contest.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just went up back up to that room, and I'm thinking about it. I walk up to, and I look, and I go, I got 7,000 left. I said, I'm going to go home with 6. So I bet another $1,000 exactor 9-1. If I don't do that, Derek, I lose by 200.
Oh, my goodness. Tommy, I got to ask you, because you said something very interesting there. Now, I understand that you're a very accomplished contest player, but you kind of knew what it took to win. And I think this is always tough for people that are new to contests. How did you determine that? Is that just through your past contest play, or how did you come up with the number that you thought was going to win this contest?
Well, I just went and, you know, basically Googled that contest previous results and saw one year, a couple guys had like 100,000, but most of them were right around that 70 number. You know, if you take the high end, you know, when you're doing, you know, I'm not a mathematician, but I remember doing when you want to do an average of something, you take the high number out and the low number out if they're not close to the median and just, you know, add up the rest. And so it looked like, you know, 70 was what it would take, you know?
That's great. Hey, I got to ask you, you're a professional player. I've heard so much about you.
Yeah, I guess it's the only thing I do for a living. And, you know, sometimes I'm on the sheet professionally. I owe money. It's not easy, man. I put it this way. I don't think there's a horse player on earth that has enough edges and insulation as I do.
Got to ask you about that, Tommy, because, you know, I think there's lots of different ways to beat the game. You know, some people, numbers people, which is interesting, by the way, because I like Conquest Big E also, but I'm more of a numbers guy. Some people are great at looking at the horse. How do you find your edges at the racetrack?
So I want to talk about Conquest Big E. That was nothing special other than Brody's Cause is 7-2 and got all this hoopla. And when they race against each other, Conquest Big E was much better. Now, I know Brody's Cause came back and beat a lot better horses the next time, but I just looked at that simple. Like, here's 7-2. Here's a horse one day was way better than him. He's 30-1. I don't need to look at the rest. There's my values right there, and that's good enough for me.
Mm-hmm.
I hit a small bet, the fooling around bet at Woodbine on a 70-1 shot a few weeks ago. That was, the turf was playing stone closers. Here's a stone closer that a year ago at the same distance in the same class came second. Right?
Yeah.
You know, and when you're looking at 70-1, what's the hesitate? Put $50 on them and, you know.
Well, it sounds to me that you kind of have a price in mind, too. I mean, not only were you looking at what it's going to take to win that contest, but you mentioned, like, hey, I like Conquest Big E a whole lot at 30-1, maybe not so much at 15-1. I know I kind of do the same thing. Any you know, tips you can give players that don't have a great concept of value and explaining why it is so important that you at least have some idea as to what price a horse should be?
Okay, I'll go a bit further than that. I think the best way to look at things is you come into the track and you see your bankroll, and if your bankroll's $100, even at a $100 bankroll, you got to be looking that if I'm going to bet my money, there's a chance to make $2,000 or $3,000.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you're coming in and playing with, you know, $300, $400, $500, you got to be in the mindset not to double your bankroll, not to hit a race and quit. You got to be going in there looking to bet to win $10,000, $20,000. And that's the only way. If you have that mindset, you're going to put yourself out of playing alls in the pick four and focusing more and stop this. You know, it's an analogy of, do you want the cards or you want the chips, right?
Right, right.
And most racetrackers, most gamblers, you know, they want the cards. They'll never admit it, but they really want the cards.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to be willing to lose, you know. The biggest fear horse players got are losing, but we lose all the time, don't we, Derek? Most of the time we go to the track, we lose, right?
Absolutely.
So how can you be scared to lose? So lose every day. I'll lose for a month at a time. But when I hit them, and it takes once when, you know, instead of spending 96 combinations on a dollar pick four and you spend the same $96 and you play a $7 one or an $8 one and you hit and now you're catching 16,000, you'll be cured for life from stupidity.
Tommy, I love that. I love what you're saying there because I've made this point over and over again. I love when people, you know, they're going to hedge or they got saver wagers. What is a saver wager? I mean,
you know what I tell them? I
what's
know,
that?
You're saving now. It's costing you $138 where you could have saved for $1.47. You put them in to begin with. So if you didn't have them to
yep.
begin with.
Hey, you mentioned, in fact, the pick three, pick four and stuff like that. I have never been a huge fan of that bet. What do you think? Because I know it's really, really popular with a lot of race trackers.
Okay. Are you good at math, Derek?
I actually am.
Okay, because I think I'm good at math, right? But I get debated on this all the time. What if the pick four is 24%, what's the real takeout on it?
Well, you tell me. I mean, because I got the
simple answer. I divide it by four and say it's 6%.
Okay.
Right? Because takeout only counts if you win, right?
Right.
If you lose, it doesn't matter. Zero is zero. So I look at playing a pick four over four races. To me, it's 6-6. Six and six. It's four bets at 6%. Where if you're doing a parlay, you know, the compound on the 15% of the win bet ends up being way more than 24 after four bets, right?
That's true, but I'll tell you.
More than six.
Yeah, I'll tell you the reason, though, Tommy, that I think a lot of players get sucked in when they shouldn't to pick threes and pick four, so I'll be curious how you play them. Granted, the takeout is lower. That argument has been made over and over again that it's lower than a parlay. The problem is you don't get to pick your races. If you're playing a typical parlay. Well, let's just use a sports parlay. You get to pick your teams. You get to pick your games. The handicappers don't get to pick the races. And some of those races are perhaps not in their wheelhouse as a handicapper. And so you do get a lot of players that are just hitting the all ticket. And I've got kind of a funny story in that regard. And I don't know if this is true. It just seems like it. But every time I hit the all button, it's going to be one of the top three favorites winning. It's for whatever reason, those are the kinds of races that get me, the big value races I'm okay with. How do you go about betting the pick three and the pick four?
I would usually say if you're playing at a track with rolling doubles pick threes, right?
Mm-hmm.
On all races, it's really stupid, I think. I'm talking pick threes and pick fours. Okay, it's just so stupid. Now, I play at a track that doesn't have rolling doubles, right? Woodbine most of my time, right?
Okay.
So now if I got eight to, it's the middle of the card, no double, and I got 8-1 onto 12-1, right? Then I'm going to have cold all, cold press four horses, cold press two horses, cold press another horses, because I want to play, you know, I can't play a double. But now if I'm at Belmont Park, that's not cold all, that's cold double, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a pick four where I'm going 2x2, by three, by nine, what do I need the nine for? I play the pick three nine times. Or play the pick three seven times and stab at two long shots in the win four. And it's the same amount of money spent. You follow that, right?
I do. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the all is crazy. If you have, now if you're, you know, if you're playing a pick five, I understand, right? But even when I pick fives, I try to bear down. I try to have a base ticket that's small. I try to catch them 12 times, eight times, you know. I try to, you know, because the rule I have for pick threes, fours, and fives, how could you possibly use every horse, use 36 horses on your ticket, how could you possibly like them all for the same amount?
See, that's a great point. And that's what I thought you were driving at when we were talking about value, because to me, and talking about losing at the racetrack, because to me, you're going to be right less often than you're going to be wrong. So get paid when you're right. And when you spread and start doing this stuff, you know, the ROI, it really starts to cut into it. And I would rather play for a bigger ROI, bigger return, if we want to look at it that way, than, you know, having myself all over the place in races that I really have no business playing in the first place. Because if I have to play the all ticket, that means I have no edge.
Okay, I'll give you my aha moment, right? I'm losing my shirt. This is a long time ago, and I'm, you know, I go up to play the last win four at Woodbine, and I got my ticket written out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I write it down on a piece of paper, and I usually walk up to that piece of paper and bet it. But before I walk up, I go through the form and, you know, I check it again, right? Make sure I don't make mistakes. So here I go. In the first race, I got two horses. Morning Line, third choice. Second race, I got the chalk keyed. Third race, I got the three favorites. And in the last race, I got five horses. 1, 2, 3, 4, Morning Line, and a 15-1 shot. And I'm looking at it, I'm going, like, what the hell am I doing? What can I make? You know, like, I don't even got a price on here except that one horse.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a brainstorm. I go, that race with the five horses, even though I like the 15 to one shot the least, I keyed him and played it for $5. It went chalk, 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 that horse, paid $1,200. I got $6,000, and I was cured. That was the day where the light came on and said, look at that. I took the fifth, my fifth choice, I took him and keyed him, who was barely a throw-in, you know, and sat down going, what a dummy. What did I just do? I wasn't, you know, I wasn't a dummy. The light came on and said, look at that. You know, the only, that was the only horse on the, you know, it's either don't play the ticket or play it just with him because nothing else, you know, you're looking to double your ticket, you know, if all the other numbers came in.
Oh, I could not agree more. That's just one. It's actually, it's one of the strategies I've employed as well, because the idea of, you know, having a ticket, and it's like you said, sometimes you don't even realize it, but then you look at it and you think, well, wait a second. If this horse comes in and this horse comes in and this horse comes in, I'm not going to get anything. So why am I playing those horses?
Yeah, it's just, you know, I'm not an, I don't need the action.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like most people are just looking, you know, it's the pick four. I got to play the pick four.
Hey, Tommy, before I let you go, I got to ask you about your handicapping technique. What are the kinds of factors that you look at? You know, what are the products you use, that kind of thing?
Well, I use, this correlates to the pick threes and pick fours, and you get those races. The races that get me stumped are the first-time starter races.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to use something called Maiden Stats, but now that's all common knowledge, so it's no edge. It's actually a reverse, you know. They get, horses get overbet with the right breeding and the precociousness and the trainers, you know. So that's garbage. So I started looking into clockers, and I end up, the one guy that hits me right between the eyes is a guy named Bruno DiGiulio. And when he comments on the workouts, I get it. You know, I get everything he's saying, and I've had real good luck with him, man. Like he is just so sharp. And the main thing I get out of him, I get a first time starter, not the one I'm betting on, but I know a lot whether they have speed, whether they're closers, and it gets, you know, makes it easier to handicap, you know, a race when you want to see, you know, how the pace scenarios, you know, that's my handicapping, is basically pace scenarios, most of it. This guy is mind blown. You know, I don't, you know, he's probably a good handicapper too, but I don't even look at his, you know, I'm a handicapper myself, right?
Right.
But his clocking information is great. And then I'll give some people the best advice ever. I'm in a group you probably know called the Homeless Handicappers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a, you know, a racing group. Most of the people are beginners. And there's a few guys on there, Derek, that, you know, they're not selling, you know, I'm not saying not to buy stuff, right? But some people don't want to put out their money. There's guys on there that put out their stuff for free. I'll mention two of them. One is Lewis Rollo Roberts, and he's the Redneck Bunker on Facebook.
Uh-huh. And I know Lewis.
Yeah, okay. And Lewis, you know, like you read some, you know, at first I'm going, look at this guy, look at this, you know, what's this guy? And then I start watching his picks. This guy is deadly, right? He comes up, you know, and he's a replay guy like I am, and he tells you what to watch. You know, he likes a horse today in the eighth race at Belmont. I wish I could remember the name coming out of a maiden race at Belmont, that if you watch that replay, my God, it's a 15-1 morning line with JR. He is real sharp. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I usually laugh at other people. You know, I got a bit of an ego, right? And this guy's good, man. I follow him. And there's another guy, Mike Barker, the chalkbuster. Mike, he won't, you know, what I like about him is he doesn't give you the rundown on the whole card every race. That's so silly.
Yeah.
You know, Andy Searle, everyone does it. They give you four horses in every race. And he comes up with the odd plays, and I'm looking, you know, he don't hit, but he hits on a good one once in a while. And the thing is, if you start following these free guys, you can decide for yourself, right?
Absolutely.
It costs nothing. You can watch them for a week, a month. And then, you know, you also find guys, some guys who play chalks. Now, if you're a chalk player, you want to follow him because, you know, you're not going to change your stripes overnight. And if you're a long shot player, you'll follow like Lewis or Mike. But there's a whole bunch of guys out there that put in a lot of time, and they don't want nothing for it. They enjoy it. They got passion. And that's what I look at. Guys who are selling their stuff sometimes just get into that, you know, it's a job and let me get it done. These guys are passionate, man. Like, they're really, you know, and I see the work some of these guys do on there. Like Charles Warner, Harry Watnick, who should, you know, he's a poet. He's a poet handicapper. I don't know if you ever read his stuff.
That guy writes like Michener novels. And it's like, you know.
Oh, my favorite author.
Yeah,
good boy, Derek.
You raise a great point, too, because...
Yeah, I read Michener, and that's the greatest example, because if you read Michener, you know, Michener is teaching you a history lesson, mm-hmm. and then on the flip side, he's telling you a beautiful story.
Well, and the thing is, because that's a great point, because I've done the daily selections, that kind of stuff, and you're absolutely right. You simply cannot devote that kind of time to it. And so the guys that are out there looking at certain races or, you know, giving their angles, that's always been my thing too. I want you to explain. I can't stand when people just put out picks. No, explain. So maybe I agree with your analysis, maybe I don't, but you've given me something to think about. I know it's something I always tried to do when I put out selections.
Yeah, like Harry Wodnick, right? I don't get to his selections. I read his. It's like you should get all of those and put them in a book, and every horse player would love them, and even non-horse players would love it.
Absolutely. Well, hey, Tommy, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. Best of luck going forward, and don't spend all the money in one place.
Yeah, don't worry about that. It's my pleasure, Derek. I'll talk to you anytime on the show, off the show. Enjoy talking to you.
Sounds great. Take care, my friend. I want to thank Tommy Masters for being my guest. Most of all, I want to thank all of you for listening. Hope you have a great wagering week. Talk to you again next week.